there are counties that have made panic buttons that poll workers can hit. There are counties that have outfitted every polling location with a smartphone so that they have immediate access to like a central hotline. There's definite training on like how to know when to call in law enforcement.
Hey y'all, this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Go ahead, Wheeler. Start us off.
You looked like you were taking a breath and you were about to start, and I hate it when we do that. I hate when we both like, hey, everybody, you know, and it's just confusing right off the top. We're going to put this in, aren't we?
Yeah, let's use it. Hey guys, welcome to Yolitics here. I have to give him a breath because he'll step on me every time.
My God. Race out of the gates before I can even take a breath.
Here we are.
We're very high strung.
We have a week left in early voting. And
we're putting up some big
there's
numbers.
There's a lot of wild stuff happening. Yeah, huge numbers for Texas. And early on, we were thinking, there's no way this is going to be 2020.
Yeah.
And already, within the first couple of days, crushing those numbers.
Yeah, and it was right to think that, too, because 2020 was a weird year, you know, because we were in the middle of the pandemic, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, we were still in that, hey, try to social distance, try to stand six feet apart, and it's hard to do that when you're in a voting line, but, you know, people, I think, figured, too, like, let me get in there and vote early so that I'm, you know, not with the masses who might be showing up on election
day. Who might get me sick.
But we're, you know, in some cases outpacing those numbers from 2020. So a lot of people have been really energized about this election so far, and we still have some days to go here.
And we have a full week to go here. Listen, let's start with a Texas brew.
I'll do that.
Do you want this one?
Yeah, I'm going to have the Oktoberfest. This is from Rahr and Sons in Fort Worth. Shout out again, by the way, to the Greater Fort Worth Builders Association.
James Rodriguez.
See, we're talking over each other again and saying the same thing.
They had me over to MC an event the other night, their municipal awards event in Fort Worth. And they said, listen, you guys, you do an okay podcast. They said, your podcast is okay.
They kept it real.
but they said, you don't have enough Fort Worth beers on your podcast. So
we've had Fort Worth beers on, but yeah, they may be
but
right.
But clearly not
we
enough.
Need to represent.
And so they gave us, James and the Greater Fort Worth Builders Association gave us a great cooler that we're going to be able to use on all of our shoots. And he gave us some Fort Worth beer to put in there.
Yeah, so
He even said there's some fruity beer in there for Wheeler because he knows, like the rest of society, that Wheeler enjoys fruit in his beer.
I think you've made sure that every single viewer and listener of this podcast knows that. And I don't shy away from it.
Yeah, it is what it is.
I don't shy away from like a good pineapple cider or a really good blackberry mead. You know,
a mead. Lord Wheeler enjoys his meads.
So this time we are talking about, you know, I think something that's on a lot of people's minds. I went and voted early the other day, along with, you know, apparently the masses here in Texas who've been doing this. And you show up and you almost expect like, okay, who's going to start something here? Like, it just seems like it used to be that you would go early vote and you're just, you know, like scrolling through your phone while you're in line and you're not really paying attention to anything. And you don't, you know, have any thought about any possibility of any confrontations. Now, though, just because of the environment that we're in and the warnings that we've had, you think, okay, is anything funky going to go on here?
See, I would expect you would be starting something. If I was voting with you, you'd be the one to be watching.
I am the least likely to start problems. I am a finisher of problems. I'm never a starter of problems.
Steven Seagal, right? Regular.
So the only thing that did happen when I was there to vote is they did come over and, you know, it was like some people were back in those good old days of scrolling through their phones. You cannot do that even in line now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I knew you couldn't do it, like you couldn't pull it out in the voting booth and go through it, because I used to do that for some of the races if I hadn't studied ahead of time. I was that person taking a long time in one of the booths.
Keep it moving.
But this time you can't even do that in the line now. But they were very respectful about it, very nice about it. There was no confrontation, that sort of thing. But a lot of people, and rightly so, are worried about confrontations, problems, potentially violence at the polls and then beyond the polls when we get into the counting process, because we actually saw that happen the last time around.
The Wall Street Journal had this
in different
article
places,
the other day.
Not in Texas necessarily, sure. but in different places.
That's a good thing. When I early voted the other day, I had zero line. I went to a downtown Dallas location that someone said go to. There's no one there.
I was the one who recommended that.
Did you recommend that to me? Well, I went. There was no line.
Now I'm
at
known
all.
As someone.
Yeah. Well, there was no line there, so I didn't think it was the same place that you went to. But nobody was there. Still, though, what's shocking? A couple things that are striking to me: the records that we're breaking in the state for early voting. There are some rural counties. Denton County is probably one of the biggest, I believe. Within the first couple of days, they had 20% turnout. Massive numbers.
Yeah.
And throughout this whole thing,
you say Denton County is rural?
No. I said it's the largest county it's the largest county that has the largest turnout.
Okay.
But you know what's striking about this to me is that the turnout is so big, and there's such this underlying concern that's still simmering about: are we going to see more things that we saw like in January 6th?
Yeah.
Are we going to see the terrible assassination attempts? Yeah. Attempt on Donald Trump. There is so much concern.
Well,
and
not
worry
only that,
right now,
but back in 2020, when you saw that when there was counting going on and people were showing
the
up
craziness.
At election offices, yes, where the counting was happening and banging on windows and doors and wanting the count to stop, and it got kind of crazy.
And elections administrators now have said in Texas, they said this is enough. We need to figure this out. We got to make sure that we're all safe. So as part of their training, they are learning to handle conflict. They're learning to, at what point do you call police? These are things they never had to consider before.
No.
The Wall Street Journal had an article the other day about Arizona. I got the alert on my phone and I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Maricopa County in Arizona, they have snipers on the roofs nearby the elections administrator headquarters. They have drones up there as well, because they are expecting there could be some problems around the counting of votes come November the 5th.
I'll tell you what, too. I don't think that these people are hyperbolic, these folks who are in law enforcement. I think that it just gives you an idea. We see a certain amount. A certain amount is reported out, okay? But there's stuff that we don't hear about, that we don't know about, the threats that they know of that we don't know of. And it does speak to, wow, what are they seeing or hearing or noticing in chatter that we haven't seen?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that they typically decide like, hey, let's be real escalatory and show up with snipers on the roof and do this and this and this that really makes this known that we're there for a big show of force. I don't think that they choose to do that because they want to. I think they choose to do that because they think that the threat is real.
Doing all this preparation, and there's also preparation for the unknown.
Yeah.
What are we not preparing for that could happen? We're preparing for everything that has happened.
Right.
And that's what always happens in these situations. You say, oh, well, this happened 3 years ago. We need to get ready for this. What if there's something new?
The old Donald Rumsfeld, the unknown unknowns.
Is that what Rumsfeld said?
Yeah. I think it was Rumsfeld who coined that phrase. What about the unknown unknowns out there?
So, Wheeler likes to think he knows a lot about elections, and he knows a lot about these quotes, too. But
I'm going to have to go look that up to make sure I'm right.
You better be right, bro. You better be right. But we have a real elections expert on the podcast. It's not just
Thank
us
goodness
talking
for
about
that.
It.
And we're not going to say her name right now because we're going to go straight to it. Because, you know, she had to kind of school, I think, you again.
I said it right initially.
We've known her. Like, it's not that we've just met her or had her on. Like, we know her.
Listen, you're about to hear me pronounce it correctly when he puts me on the spot. And then he says, it's blank blank. And how do you say your last name?
I'm telling you.
It's such a weak attempt. It is such a weak attempt.
I think you had a lucky guess.
She knows the ins and outs of voting, not only in Texas. She knows them across the country, and she is with VoteBeat.org. But let's go ahead and play this conversation.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
All right, so let's keep the conversation going here because we had to call in right away because this all fits perfectly with her whole beat. What is her name again, Jason?
I don't know how to pronounce it, but you clearly know.
I've given you the cheat sheet.
No, go ahead.
Had her on, what is it, three times
now? No, but tell the story.
Maybe more.
Tell the story. So
we were thinking about this subject, and we're like, oh, my God, we've got to talk to Jessica from VoteBeat, who knows all about these things. And nobody can ever remember, even here in our building.
I think I pronounce it correctly all the time.
How do you say it?
I say Hoosman.
That's
That's how you say it.
Okay.
That's not what you said, though.
What did I say?
I don't know.
I wasn't even here yesterday. What are you talking about?
You know what? It was somebody else.
But here's the story. So they're having a discussion about how to pronounce Jessica's last name, and they can't figure it out. And Wheeler swoops in, of course.
And I'm like, she told me.
With the winning goal.
You know, they're like gaslighting me, like, no, she has told me this. And I'm like, no, she told me the last time the secret cheat, which is like, who's the man? Who's the man? And I remembered that, and this is the only time I've ever gotten it right.
It's true. Who's the man? That was my every time I ran for class president when I was in high school. That was my campaign slogan. Who's the man?
Nice. Did you win?
I was VP, so I came in second. Nice. That's how my high school did it. It was like, if you come in second, you get VP. If you come in first,
like
you get
choice,
president.
Huh?
Yeah,
so this was,
ranked choice.
Yeah.
This was predetermined years ago that you would just naturally go into this field.
Yeah, I think so. It's just, I'm baked in. Yeah.
Before we get going, show us your shoes.
Oh my gosh.
I thought you were
my vote
me.
Shoes.
It scared me.
No, not yours.
Oh, you've got
they
vote
say,
shoes.
They say vote.
Where do you buy these? Did
okay.
you design these?
No, I did not.
They say vote, V-O-T-E on them.
Yes.
You can't see them yet.
I'm well known for these in election circles. just so, because I'm very cool.
These are not on a shelf, though.
No, well, so Birdies, which is a shoe brand, did like a limited run of these in 2020.
Oh my God, that's great.
And so I bought some in 2020, and I walked through, like you can see the letters are peeling, and so the letters were just totally gone. And my friend found some more online.
That's great.
So these are technically half a size too big for me because I have tiny little feet. But I'm making it work.
Yeah
they're seasonally appropriate.
It's not the fit that matters. It's the message.
It's
Jessica.
The message. I know. I'm all about, you know, style over substance.
I love that.
And we are too here at Yolitics. A lot more style than substance.
That's why we've had you on so many times.
Because of my style.
But let's talk. You know, we've talked about doing this episode for a while now.
We have,
And we put it off like, well, we don't want to alarm anybody. We don't want to gaslight, which is the word of the day, evidently.
Well, and to be fair here, originally we had planned to speak with some people in the security world, in the law enforcement world about, you know, the threats and the worries that they have going into this election. And there has been a lot of chatter about that among them. And they got cold feet as we started to go through this election season because we have seen some episodes, you know, notably with former President Trump, you know, the assassination attempt and the other plot. And, you know, that sort of poured cold water on people wanting to talk about this. But the issue itself doesn't go away. And there's a lot of preparations that are going on for Election Day and beyond. And you did this whole article on this with the headline, Election Officials Prepare Poll Workers and Staff for the Threat of Political Violence. This is a real live topic.
It is a real live topic. And I think that, you know, I think I understand the hesitancy of security professionals because I do think that the vast majority of Americans are going to go to the polls and it's going to be boring and nothing's going to happen and they're going to wave hello to their poll worker and they're going to go home and they're going to forget about it, right?
Totally agree. Wonderfully boring.
Wonderfully boring. That is exactly how it should be. But I do think that there are going to be isolated incidents, maybe not of outright violence, but of definite chaos. And so that puts a lot of pressure on poll workers to sort that out because they're the ones who are there, who are sort of overseeing the voting process. And so if something happens at the polls, they're the ones who have to deal with it because county election administrators may not even be on the scene, right? Mm-hmm. They'll come, but they're not going to be there when things happen. And so it's sort of incumbent upon them to train poll workers in a way that we didn't really have to do before 2020, 2016 on conflict resolution and de-escalation and all of these things that you don't necessarily think about when you think about poll worker training, but people are thinking about now.
Real quickly there, the people that you've talked to, because you've spoken with people in a lot of different states about this issue, are they assuming that they may see these kinds of incidents at the polls on Election Day itself? Because I voted early. It was boring, wonderfully boring, like you just said. Wonderfully boring, no problems, no issues, no strangeness there. Are they looking that this could happen if it's going to on Election Day itself when we might see the most people heading to the polls?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that that's definitely, that's the day where the most number of people vote. I mean, most Americans vote early. Like, mm-hmm. that is the majority of Americans will not vote on Election Day, but like a plurality of people are going to be turning out to vote on that day. And a lot of important things happen on that day because for a lot of states, that's the day they start counting. That's the day they start announcing results. And so that's really when emotions start to fly. Mm. And so I think that in addition to just at the polling locations, concerns about that, what they're also concerned about is the counting process and maintaining the integrity of the counting process. In 2020 and in 2022, there were a lot of incidents in which counting was disrupted or people sort of intentionally tried to cause chaos in places where the ballots were being kept. And so I think they're mostly worried about that rather than at any specific individual polling location.
Mm. How concerned are you about political violence after this, like after November the 5th, maybe the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th? Because this is going to drag on, we were discussing, and a lot of people think it is.
It is. It's going to drag on. I'm of two minds. You know, I think that one of the reasons that we saw violence in 2020 is because nobody was really prepared for it. And so that left an opening for people to, to attack, right, when unprepared. We'd never had people try to storm the Capitol before. And so I don't think that the Capitol Police were prepared for that eventuality. Everyone is prepared this year. So while, yes, I think that the tension and the language has been ramped up pretty significantly, even from 2020 to this year, I think that the people who are responsible for protecting the people doing the thing are much more prepared than they were in 2020. And so I think that that level of preparation is probably good. You can prevent something you're prepared for. Like you can, prepare against it.
I'm sorry, Jess, what kind of sporadic outbursts are you expecting? What are you thinking could happen?
You know, I think that there's probably going to be incidents in which people disrupt central count facilities. In which people sort of cause chaos and emotion because they have misinterpreted something. And this is what we saw in 2020 as well, right? People are like, oh, you can't do that. You're committing fraud right now because they don't understand the process and they don't understand how things are supposed to work. And so they sort of blow something out of proportion and that little misinformation sort of sand grows and, frustrates and sort of spirals out of control. We saw, shouting and screaming in Detroit in 2020.
Banging on the windows. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was, in Maricopa County, there was a lot of chaos.
Yeah.
And so I think that in these places where tension has been stoked for a really long time, it's not going to take a whole lot to set it off on election day. And I think it's going to be kind of incumbent upon everyone who participates in this process to keep it together.
This time around, though, we're much more likely to see a heavier law enforcement presence at these locations just to keep the peace, whereas back in 2020, they may not have been expecting a crowd to show up outside. Nobody used to show up outside the counting building where they
talk about wonderfully boring.
Yeah,
wonderfully boring.
Wonderfully boring as well.
And now, I think that poll workers and election administrators and the secretaries of state, they're all very aware of this. And not only because they're actually afraid of it, but because their poll workers keep telling them, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, I'm scared to be a poll worker. Mm-hmm. And so the secretaries and the election administrators are making sort of accommodations for that. There are counties that have made panic buttons that poll workers can hit. There are counties that have outfitted every polling location with a smartphone so that they have immediate access to like a central hotline. There's definite training on like how to know when to call in law enforcement. Hmm. And I don't know that, when I started covering election administration and voting rights in 2016, that's definitely not something that was addressed in poll worker training. Like, at what point do I call the police? Mm-hmm. A flow chart of when to involve law enforcement was not included in the pamphlets that they gave out, right? It is now. And I think that's a sad state of affairs, but I also think that it means that our election officials have sort of heard the concerns. They have seen how nervous people are, and they have done something about it. And I think we should be thankful for that.
And I think that, you know, in this article, you laid it out in a great way as to the different things that they've been gaining out in different states. You focused on Michigan, you focused on Pennsylvania, you focused on Arizona. I think a lot of us expect these things to reach that fever pitch in the places where they did last time, in these battleground states, these seven states that are, you know, considered toss-ups. But, you know, might we even see these in some quote-unquote safe states? You know, I mean, you spoke with folks here in Texas as well. Do they have the same kinds of concerns?
You know, I think people are often surprised to know that some of the craziest things happen in sort of the most ideologically consistent places. Hmm. Because there is a tipping point where it becomes like the common sentiment. So, for example, a lot of the counties that we have seen refuse to certify the results and their meetings to break out into chaos and open hostility are deep ruby red counties like Shasta County, California, or Washoe County, Nevada. And it's because there's nobody there to push back. It just builds and builds and builds, and it sort of eats itself. And so, you know, I think that it's not just in the places that are incredibly tense and that everyone is focused on. It is also in these places that feel kind of ignored and where the ideology is largely consistent. It just happens to be pretty extreme.
Like a group thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In Maricopa County, the Wall Street Journal and New York Times the other day was talking about snipers on the roofs around the Central Count building there. Drones doing surveillance to make sure no crazies got over there. But then you, in your reporting, you said that, you know, data show in fact that political violence is not at an all-time high for the U.S. right now, and that recent incidents, which Jason mentioned here in the beginning of the podcast, if anything, diminish support for such action overall. So are things not as hot as we think they are?
I think things feel very hot, but I think sort of not in a way that isn't necessarily intuitive. When there is the threat of violence, it tends to knock people back down into place, right? I think that people think everything is awful, everything is awful, everything is awful, and then they see something really terrible happen. They see an attempt on a presidential candidate's life, or they see something wildly melt down at a polling location, and they're like, oh, that's what could happen if we continue down this road. And so they sort of start to put the brakes on themselves. And so, you know, I think that it's important for Americans to understand that in sort of the arc of American history, we are not nearly in the most politically violent time that we've ever had, right? The civil rights era was incredibly violent all the time. And compared to that, we're way down. And so I think that there is, because people like to sort of forget about farther times, you know, they're like, it is really bad right now, but all they're remembering is the last decade or even the last two decades. But there have been points in American history that are far more problematic and politically violent than right now. And
good
I think
context.
We've learned from those.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
To have.
It's all relative. You know, I think something that's interesting is that we've been having these regular meetings with some of the election supervisors in North Texas, and just kind of talking to them about the different issues that they're seeing and some of the preparations that they're making. And one thing that really stood out to me is the education efforts, the outreach efforts that they've been trying to engage in since the last presidential election, where they're trying to like invite the public in, like, hey, come in, come look at the machines, you know, touch the machines, you know, let's run a little test here and see how the machines do. Let's show you how the process works. And the interesting thing that stood out to me was that very few people take them up on that. A lot of people aren't showing up to see, well, let me see how the process works. Let me see the safeguards they have in place here. To the point where when we were talking, one of them was considering possibly, you know, trying to, you know, seek permission to do a TikTok video on this or an Instagram reel on this to kind of show people, here's how the process works. And, you know, if you have any questions, you know, let's answer these. But the engagement's not there. People aren't showing up for that. But then you do see people showing up at the end of the process. And as you said, they aren't quite clear on what's going on, and they make of it what they want it to be.
Yeah, you know, I think that there is, I talk about this a lot with other media that I train on voting issues and election issues. there's sort of a disconnect here between when people want to focus on voting and when election administrators can make things like that happen, mm-hmm. right? So when they're doing things like lodging and accuracy testing, or when they're putting the machines on display, it is early enough that they can accommodate it because they have time, but it is so early that other people are like, the election, that's not for weeks.
They're
they're tuned out. And so, you know, I encourage I encourage the media to do sort of these early visits to election offices where they like get tour of the warehouse and they can do a B-roll of the, you know, the voting machines and how everything works and sort of be walked through everything. Like, go to that, because that's when you're going to get the detailed explanations. And so I think it's a timing thing, right? I think people want to think about the election when they're thinking about the election. They don't want to think about it before they have to. And so they don't get a lot of engagement for this. If they were doing it on election day, you know, they might get something else. But who has time for that, right? The election administrators have more important things to do on that day than sort of open their doors to the public, because they're just opening their doors to the public in a different way. And so I think it's a little bit of a timing problem.
It's the same reason campaigns don't spend money on these ads until the final few weeks when people are really paying attention to it.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about some of the numbers here too in your reporting, because this goes back to May. You saw a survey from the Brennan Center. This is of election administrators. 40% of election administrators nationwide, right? They've taken steps to increase the physical security of election offices and polling locations in the last 4 years. And then almost 40%, 38, have experienced harassment or abuse. That's stunning to think that those numbers are that high, all because of what is essentially the big lie from 4 years ago.
It's really striking how pervasive it's been. And I think that it's important for people to know that a lot of these people who are harassing and threatening poll workers or harassing and threatening election officials are not necessarily threatening their own election officials. A lot of the people that we have seen prosecuted for these things by the DOJ task force that's looking at this more closely is we're seeing people from California threatening Texas officials. We're seeing people from Minnesota threatening people in Arizona.
Cable news, social media, they get radicalized.
Exactly. You know, something blows up in a county, in like Antrim County, Michigan, for example, in 2020, had an error that was corrected and entirely human-made, right? Elections are run by people. There are going to be mistakes. And the Trump campaign blew that mistake up so much that Antrim County, Michigan, which is a county I'm sure that most people had never even heard of prior to this happening, got an influx of threats and harassment, and not from their local voters, right? From everyone else that was learning of these people for the first time. We hear a lot about that in places like Maricopa, in places like Milwaukee, or places like Philly or Detroit. The people who are being harassed there are generally calling in from at least out of the county, but probably out of state.
Wow. I've seen a lot of reporting this time around too, though, that some of these election offices have geared up, they've hired on staff to try to make the process go faster, the counts after the fact. We really saw this boil over the last time when it took days and days to get, winners in some of these states that were so close. They were too close to call still. And it seems like that's when people become very restive, especially if they're hearing from their candidate that the counting needs to be stopped while they're still ahead and that this is being rigged. And it really gets people ginned up. We may be in that situation again, though, even with extra election workers this time, where it takes days and days to get to a result. And yet we've seen so many people in different places calling for hand counts of these ballots, which you have witnessed
here
in Texas, and it didn't go well.
Train wreck.
No, it's completely it's completely contradictory. They're like, we must have a result on election night. Also, we should hand count all the ballots. Like, these two things cannot happen at one time.
Yeah.
Unless you've got 1,000 people on hand at any given time who you're paying to sit there and just count, you're not going to pull that off. And even with 1,000 people in huge counties, you're not going to pull that off. And so
if you do, the number is probably going to be wrong, as you witnessed when you saw one county in Texas.
One county in Texas do it for just the Republican primary, right? Can
Small
you imagine
number votes,
the number of ballots that are going to be cast in that same county in a general election over both parties, everyone involved, all hands in? That's an incredible That's a much higher number of ballots. And so, you know, I think in we're gonna see, I think, it happen a little bit faster this year than we did in 2020, certainly, because as you point out, places have sort of augmented their counting procedures, but also we're not gonna see as many mailed ballots as we did in 2020. We are no longer in a pandemic. Mailed ballots take longer to count. They're a little bit more sort of labor intensive. We're gonna see fewer mailed ballots, but we're still going to see several days of counting in places like Arizona, where there is a quite a lot of mail-in ballots and people have 5 days after election day to cure any problems. Let's say they left a signature off or their signature doesn't match for whatever reason. They have 5 days to come back and make sure that their ballot counts and confirm that that is their signature. So,
and Pennsylvania could be a slow one again?
Pennsylvania will probably be a slow one again for a lot of the same reasons, and because there's a lot of confusion from county to county and a lot of differences from county to county in terms of how they cure ballots, how they count them, what process they're using, what machines they're using. That's different in every county in Pennsylvania. And so we published a story a couple of weeks ago that says, you know, while Allegheny County is definitely going to have results on election night, Philly won't. And it's not because they, like, one is doing it right and one is doing it wrong. They're just using different procedures. And so one takes longer and one doesn't. And so I think the media has done a better job this year setting their readers and viewers and listeners up to expect the count to take longer than it otherwise, like than they might be used to. But I think it's also important to know that elections are so much closer than they have been in recent American history. And close elections are harder to call. The calls that we see on election night, they are projections. It's a lot easier to project the results when the results are spread.
Yeah.
When they're really close and it could go either way, the science of that projection becomes less and less accurate. And so I think people have assumed that we have official results on election night for a really long time, when what they actually are seeing is the AP calling the race.
Right, and that's just gotten harder because these elections have gotten tighter.
Have gotten so much closer.
Did your phone just go off in the middle of the podcast?
It did. You want me to read it?
Unprofessional.
Yeah, who's texting?
Let me read who's texting.
It was Mrs. Wheeler?
It was one of my daughters. Oh. It's usually someone I know who's interrupting what I do.
Jessica, last question I have is kind of similar to that. It's kind of a two-parter. I'm curious to know what you think the percentage of early vote is going to be in the total vote. So at 7:01, we start getting these early votes out there. How much of the total vote is that? And then secondly, how long until we know the winner of the presidential election?
I think it's going to be very similar to last year, their last election cycle. You know, I don't think we knew until Saturday after
4 or 5 days later.
Yeah, 4 or 5 days later. I think it will probably take 4 or 5 days again this time. It will probably be a little bit faster, maybe 3 or 4 instead of 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to know on election night. And I think that that's normal and expected, and people should be okay with that. I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of sort of surprising turnout during early voting already in places, even places that are like hurricane affected, like North Carolina had a huge turnout on the first day of early voting. Georgia had a huge turnout on the first day of early voting. I think there are a lot of reasons for this. My favorite theory is that everybody just wants this election to be over with.
And
they're like, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to think about this anymore.
I think you're right.
And so I think that that's part of it. They're just sort of like willing themselves out of election season. And I think we will see probably 2/3 of Americans are going to end up casting their ballots early or by mail, like not on election day in a polling location. There's going to be lots of other ways.
It'll be 2/3. So at 7:01, when we see the results in Texas, at least the early voting results, you think that'll be close to 2/3 of the total vote?
I think it'll depend on the county, right? Yeah. But yes, I think I think early voting is becoming a lot more popular than it used to be. And it gets more popular every year. And especially in this kind of election where people are sick of it, it's an awful season. They don't want to think about it anymore. Getting it out of the way and done with is something that's going to be increasingly more popular.
Boy, that could be some really telling numbers that come out early in the night than on election night. It's so much more convenient to do it early too, because you can go anywhere in the county, you know, and do it versus, you know, waiting for the day of. My last thing for you is, you've spoken with these people across the country. Some of them are putting snipers in place, you know, at the counting facilities. A lot of them are installing these panic buttons, like you said, at these different precincts, which is just, you know, kind of stunning when you think back, you know, to not very long ago. Has anybody expressed to you that they're worried about the unknown unknown, like the thing that they haven't prepared for that may come along that they just haven't thought out when they've gamed these things out?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there's always something that surprises election administrators and officials every single year. You know, I think in 2016, everybody was prepared for super long lines. That didn't really happen, but foreign intervention happened. In 2020, everybody was prepared for foreign intervention, and that didn't really turn out to be a problem, but then January 6th happened and everybody refused to certify, right? So there is a surprising thing that happens every year, and I'm not sure that we're gonna know until it's happened what's going to happen this year. I think that to the credit of election administrators, they are doing more scenario planning than I have ever seen. And so to the extent that they can predict what's going to happen, this year is the most likely year for that to go down. But I think something's going to surprise us. It always does.
Well, a November surprise.
November surprise.
Instead of the October surprise.
At least we're ending on a high note there, a positive note for everyone. Leave it to me. The unknown, yeah.
I should have had a multi-part last question like you did.
Welcome back from vacation, by the way.
Same to you.
I thought you'd be refreshed. I didn't know you were taking us down to the end of the world.
Down new rabbit holes, right fresh off
Jessica,
vacation.
Thank you so much. And I love that you're ready for battle right here with your
my
gear,
battle
your
shoes.
Gear on already.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'allitics,